The New Zealand Business Podcast, brought to you by Guerrilla Technology, your strategic and proactive IT partner.
Welcome along to the podcast. I'm your host, Paul Spain, and with me today is Richard Baitlick, who's Chief Security Strategist at FireEye, a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. And he's been involved in the cybersecurity world, I would say, probably since before the term existed, right, Richard? You've written quite a number of books over the years, and when I look back on the titles of some of those, cybersecurity isn't the term that was used.
That's true. My PhD advisor, Thomas Ridd, has a book coming out called Rise of the Machines, where he tracks the history of the term cyber. And actually goes back very far, but you're correct. Years ago, when I started in this field, it was information security, information assurance, and so forth.
Well, let's jump in. Yesterday at New Zealand's inaugural cybersecurity summit, one of your comments was that that organizations should understand that it's not a matter of if they're going to succumb to a cybersecurity attack, but more when. Can you explain that? Why are you so confident?
Certainly. So there are two broad classes of attackers in the world. There are targeted attackers and there are opportunistic attackers. So not everyone will be targeted. Not everyone will get on the radar of one of these groups who decides that you are their new project and they're going to break into your network no matter what. However, the opportunistic attackers are checking out everyone. There are thousands of groups or individuals who are scanning the entire internet every day, looking for every system that they can find. And anyone that has a weakness could potentially be exploited by one of these groups. So it is a question of preparing for something that will happen. And it is 2016. We should be cognizant of the fact that there's a good chance something has already happened to you. So whenever I'm involved with a company that we're trying to help, I don't look forward and think about what could happen some point in the future. My first priority is to find out, has something already happened? Because the statistics are against us. Not only is it likely that something has happened to you, there's a good chance it happened months ago and you don't know yet. And that's the big challenge for most of the organizations we deal with.
So looking at that bigger picture globally, I mean, what does the landscape look like from a cybersecurity perspective? What are the numbers, and how important is it that we're considering this area for our organizations?
There's an assortment of threat actors out there. You've got some people who are nation state actors. They're directed by their governments, or they work in collaboration with governments to achieve certain desired goals, whether it's to obtain information for commercial purposes or for strategic purposes or whatever. There are groups that are out there strictly for the financial side. They're stealing personally identifiable information. They're stealing credit card numbers, bank account details. In some cases, they're tricking you into sending money someplace else. As we saw within the last few months, the Bangladeshi Central Bank wired something like $81 million U.S. to criminals, basically, because they had a failure of their controls. You have some groups that are out there for fun. They're just playing with the internet and seeing what they can do. There are others that are politically motivated, so they may not like a stance that your government has or even your company has, and they want to cause you some harm. So any one of these could be a problem you may have to deal with. And for some organizations, like financial institutions in particular, they're going to be hit by all four of those groups. So they tend to have to spend a lot of money and resources and business attention on dealing with those.
And isn't it true the reality is for those larger organizations that they are getting hit by most of those, and they're succumbing to some of those attacks? It's not that our banks are actually impervious to that attack, even though they have a huge investment in most cases into cybersecurity. Might have been a little bit different in that Bangladeshi case, but certainly within the Western world, there's a fair bit that's invested in this, but still they're not protected entirely, right?
That's right. So there is no organization in the world that can stop a determined attacker. Nobody. Not the U.S. government, not the NSA, nobody. But the difference is, if you determine that someone has breached your defenses and you identify it quickly enough so that you can stop them before those intruders accomplish their mission, then it doesn't matter so much that they broke into your environment. The problem comes when someone breaks into your environment and nobody knows, and they're there for weeks, months, maybe even years in some cases. So what differentiates the winners and losers in cyberspace as far as security goes are those who find something quickly and deal with it from those who never even find out. And to the extent those later or that latter group finds out, it's generally because someone else has to tell them, whether it's the law enforcement or an intelligence agency, or sometimes even a security company will tell someone that, hey, you've had a problem. Also popular investigative journalists, they may discover that through their own sources that you've had a breach. And at that point, your news of the breach comes from the newspaper or a website where you read that your organization has suffered a breach.
Not particularly nice from a credibility perspective, is it?
No. And that's one of the biggest issues with security is you want to control this, not only the story, but you want to control what's happening as much as possible. And if something happens and you find out quickly, even if there's been some damage, hopefully you can contain it. You can work to protect your customers, your employees, your partners. But if you find out that there's been a problem by reading it in the newspaper, you're in a real world of hurt right away.
And for organizations that do get hit, what sort of impact do we see? Are businesses shutting down because they've been hit by cybersecurity attacks? Is that a reality?
It generally depends on the size of the organization. So the larger the organization, the easier it is for them to weather the problem. The smaller the organization, the more likely it is that they're not going to be able to survive, because many of the smaller organizations, if you can't make payroll, you might go out of business. If you can't pay back a loan, you'll go out of business. Whereas a larger organization, generally say a division of that large organization would be hit and the rest of the company can pull them through. Something similar happened with some very large breaches over the last few years. A certain geographic area was hit. It was a hit to the stock price, a hit to earnings, but they're still there. So I don't really see that many organizations going out of business. Now, one thing you do see that's happening more and more these days are executives will lose their jobs. So sometimes it's the director of security, sometimes it's the CIO, the chief information officer, sometimes it's the chief technology officer, sometimes it's the chief executive officer who loses a job after having a breach. So even if your company doesn't go out of business, you may go out of business and have to find yourself another job.
Well, yeah, that's definitely something most people would be probably quite keen to avoid.
It's true. And unfortunately, to me, it's a little bit of blaming the victim. We have to remember that when there's an intrusion, there's a bad guy out there who's doing this for their own gain. And sure, you can say, well, maybe the organization needed to have a better security program, but if the intruder hadn't taken those actions, there wouldn't be as much of a problem. So we've got to remember that at the end of the day, the intruder is the person who's at fault, and maybe there's a little bit of a responsibility on the victim side to do as much as they can. But at the end of the day, to your earlier question, nobody can stop every intrusion. It really comes down to how quickly you can find the problem and deal with it.
Okay. Well, maybe shortly we'll drill into what some of those things are that a responsible organization should be looking at.
Sure.
But I'm curious, looking at smaller markets, so a country like New Zealand, for instance, how is the landscape different here to what it is on a broad global basis? I guess we have, a lot of smaller businesses. Mm-hmm. Maybe we would see ourselves as not being of interest to attackers, but what's the reality with that?
So for an opportunistic attacker, simply being connected to the internet means you're interesting. If you didn't have any information at all to protect, if you had no personal data, no credit cards, no bank details, simply by the fact that you have computers that are connected to the internet, you're valuable because you can be used to hide the intruder's identity so that the ultimate victim, say in the United States or Canada or somewhere else, tries to trace who the attacker is, it comes back to New Zealand because your computers were used to launder those connections. Now, as far as small and medium-sized organizations go, the challenge to those sorts of organizations, they're not in business to be secure. They're not in business to run their own information technology. They're in business to do whatever it is that they were created to do. So larger organizations can generally create security teams and do so via economies of scale. So it's not that expensive for them to do that. To hire the type of team or to build the type of team internally that you need to hold off some of these intruders, it's too expensive for a smaller, medium-sized business. So in those cases, it's generally more economically feasible to partner with a security company to get some help. Now, we will do the same thing with large companies as well, but you know, for example, to have a team that can hold off high-level intruders, you probably need 40 people or so working around the clock and such at some of the companies that I've built teams at before. 40 people may be the entire employee workforce at a small company. So you can't just be in business to be secure.
True. And you know, for those business owners would say, well, look, we've got nothing special here. We've got nothing to protect. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are the realities? I mean, doesn't every business have something that they want to protect?
Yeah, there's sort of two trends. One of them is, if you deal with consumers, you have something of interest. You have those consumers' credit card details. You have information about them. Even your own employees. We've seen a rash of cases in the United States where businesses of all sizes have been tricked into sending their tax account details to attackers. And then those attackers file false tax returns with the government and get the money back. And businesses of all sizes have been hit with that. It's very similar cases where businesses are being tricked into sending money to attackers, again, because they think that they're doing it on the command of the chief financial officer. It turns out it was a fake attack. So everybody has to deal with this. And the second trend along with those lines is more and more companies are becoming software companies. If you build something, chances are it's going to have a computer in it of some type, and that computer will have some issues. And so more and more companies are realizing, wow, we used to sell radios, but now our radios can connect to the internet, and suddenly it's possible to exploit that radio or a refrigerator or a car or a television or whatever. So that is a whole area where it's not just protecting your own information, your own computers. You have to be able to protect the devices that you're selling to the public. And that's a whole nother level of commitment as well.
And then there's the topic of ransomware, and this is certainly one I've talked to a lot of people about and discussed on TV. There's a lot of fear around it. What's the reality in terms of what is the risk of organizations getting hit with ransomware?
So 2 years ago, if you had asked me about this, I would have said, well, historically, ransomware hasn't been that big of a problem. I don't even know if we were using the term ransomware 2 years ago. There were certain software that was around that was being used, CryptoLocker and such. But we've seen a ton of it in the last year. We've been responding to a lot of cases through our Mandiant and FireEye side. And generally, we have to come in to help once the victim is already paid. Because once your systems are encrypted, there's pretty much nothing you can do if you don't have good backups. So it is a problem, and it's been accelerated by the normalization of Bitcoin. So previously, you couldn't really do ransomware because it was too easy to follow the money that you were paying to the extortionist. These days, Bitcoin is sufficiently anonymous that the attackers feel comfortable extorting you and saying, you have to pay me in Bitcoin. And there's enough people who understand what Bitcoin is so they know how to pay. So you've got this confluence of issues that's making it very profitable for these guys who are extorting you. And what's interesting is that unlike the people who would hit you with a denial of service attack to knock you off the internet, if you paid those guys, others would come in and hit you again because you were known as a victim who would pay. Thus far with the ransomware people, once you pay, they leave you alone. So it's a different model, and it seems like they've worked out the business issues on their side.
That's curious.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned good backups being something that helps organizations that might get hit with ransomware. But isn't there a risk as we move forward in this, is that the ransomware people get smarter and smarter, and maybe their software sits in your system for a while, actually destroys your backups over a period of time before encrypting your data or digitally shredding your data, as I often say to people. Aren't there risks around that, and even cloud backups and so on, that somehow they get in and affect those things too?
Certainly. Although I tend to think that the ransomware guys might just find a new business model, because it would you're more likely to find out that something has happened, I think. But yes, what you brought up is a very important point. In our field, nothing is static. As soon as you figure out a counter to something the adversary is doing, they're going to adapt, just as you know, in warfare or in many other fields. Too often I find in our in the technical community, they have what strategist Edward Luttwak calls the delusion of the final move. So you think, okay, I've solved this, and then that's it. When in reality, there's another move coming.
Of course.
And we have to think about what that next move will be.
Yep. Now, where should business owners go? Where should business leaders go in terms of, you know, deciding what to do to minimize the risk to their organization? What would be the key things that they need to look at doing? And I guess there's some variation from, you know, larger entities that are going to be in a position to have a chief security officer and a big team, down to your smaller organization that just need some very, very simple advice. But what would be your general recommendations?
Yeah, so if you're a larger organization, almost from a liability standpoint, you need to have a chief information security officer. Many times if you've had a breach and the press launches onto it and they look and they say, well, who is your chief information security officer? If you don't have one, it's almost an admission that you were doing something wrong. So large organizations, you should certainly have one. Within those organizations, you want to find out who's responsible for looking for intrusions. If you don't have someone whose job it is to find these problems, then that's a bad sign as well. Once you find that person, let's assume that person exists, you want to know how many bad things have happened to our company over time. These are all questions that business people should be asking these departments. And then the next question you should ask is, well, how much time elapsed from when the bad thing got into our network to when we discovered it? That's called the discovery time or the detection time. And then how much time elapsed from when we discovered it to when we dealt with it? That's called containment time. And you want those times to be as short as possible. You don't want them to be on the average of several months, as we find in our global surveys of this sort of thing. If you can get it down to a few hours or even a few days, you're going to be able to survive these sorts of events. For smaller companies, what I recommend is recognize that you're not in business to do IT, and you want to partner with someone who can help you. We provide, you know, just not as a commercial, but FireEye and Mandiant, we do this sort of work all the time. You want to probably partner with a good cloud provider as well, because they can provide you, at least in some cases, if you're dealing with a good cloud partner, a level of IT support that you can't get if you have that one IT person working in your company. And just as sort of a general good hygiene things to keep in mind, any place that you can use two-factor authentication, so username and password plus a code that you might have generated on your phone or a little key fob or something, I highly recommend that. It's not impenetrable, but it does up the ante for the intruder. Good backups we mentioned as well, and being vigilant. If you're vigilant, that goes a long way.
And that requires a level of education, doesn't it? That vigilance with staff. How important is that awareness and training to the people across the organization to know what sort of things to look at and to be, you know, cautious in terms of the things that they're, you know, opening and clicking on and running and so on.
That's absolutely right. The good news, well, it's a good news, bad news story. The bad news is there are so many bad things happening. They're in the news. The good news is they're in the news, so you can read about. There's a problem with people clicking on or receiving emails that say you need to transfer these money or these files to another business unit, but it turns out to be fake. So you can read about real life incidents that are happening all the time in the news. And then you can say, well, what would we do? You know, what internal controls do we have to prevent that type of problem?
And do you see sort of statistics on the impact that it makes to an organization by getting their staff trained up, as opposed to just assuming that it's going to be all handled by the technology? Because I think there is often that assumption that, look, you know, cybersecurity, that is up to the tech heads to figure all that out and to look after. There isn't any responsibility in the hands of the individual users, and there's you know, certainly that's thinking I've come across in the past anyway.
Yeah, it certainly helps to have an engaged, educated user population. I have friends who founded a company called FishMe many years ago, and they do phishing testing. And they've worked with organizations who they would send a fake phishing email to test them, and you'd get click rates of 50% or more. And after they go through the process of learning about what this looks like, they could get the click rates down under 10%, you know, single figures. Now, you may say, okay, well, that there's still a decent number of people clicking on these things, but that's that's a big improvement in the number of cases that your security team has to work. And it makes it more difficult for the intruder to accomplish their objective. So, yeah, you're going to need a security team of somewhere, whether it's internal or external. You're going to need some technology to help you reduce those things down to a manageable level. And you want to make employees part of that. Even making it easy for them to report that something looks fishy. And I didn't mean that as a pun, but anyway. if you get an email that looks suspicious,
yeah,
don't make them go through this whole process where they have to copy the email, attach it to another message, put it to the right person. They're going to forget about all that. If they simply have a button that says, report to the security team, click, and that takes care of it, that makes life a lot easier for everybody.
That sounds like good advice. So making it very, very easy for people to advise these things is super helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You don't want to... Yeah, I've been in many companies and I've been on both sides. And any time when I've been on the side to make it easier, that's what I've tried to do, because people aren't in business to be secure. They don't go to work to fight off phishing. They're there to do whatever they're there to do.
Now, you talked about being able to look at the time that it takes to know that your network's been compromised, mm-hmm. and so on. How hard is it to actually find that information out using technology? Because sometimes, you know, you're not going to see anything obvious, right? And as you talked about, you know, you could be finding out through the media, you could be finding out through other channels. Mm-hmm. What are the technologies and pieces in the picture to help discover these things really quickly and to bring those times down?
Yeah. So something that we do and a service that I've recommended for everyone is what's called a compromise assessment, where you bring someone in that says, tell me if there are intruders in my company. Many people think in terms of doing a vulnerability assessment or a red teaming exercise, and those are great. The vulnerability assessment will tell you if you have holes. The red teaming assessment will tell you if someone could break in. The compromise assessment will tell you, is somebody already there? You know, so the first one is, could I break my window with a rock? The second one is, somebody breaks your window with a rock. The third one is, they check inside your house and find that there's already a robber there. I would much rather have the third one if I were to start with priorities. So, for example, if you were to hire me as your chief information security officer, that's the first thing I would do. I would say, let's find out what the state of this enterprise looks like. Same thing as if you'd go to the doctor and you get a blood test, right? How am I doing? You wouldn't necessarily talk so much about my diet and these sorts of things. You'd weigh me, you'd check my blood and see if my joints react when you tap on my knee. These are the sorts of things we need to be paying more attention to. And that's a change in mindset. Lots of people don't really think about that. It's tough for someone to think about this threat that is invisible. You know, there could be an intruder on your computer right now and you would never know unless they maybe took over your mouse or changed a picture or maybe started deleting some data while you were watching.
And those are all things that happen, right?
They have happened. I remember a case I worked once where the intruder learned that I was there and started sending messages to employees who were at desks near where I was working. And it would pop up and say, hi, I'm here. And the employee would raise his hand and wave, and I'd run over to that computer. And then a message would be sent to another computer in a different cubicle, and that person would stand up and say, he's over here, and running around chasing after this guy. And this guy sitting in Romania must have thought it was a real, you know, real fun time until we caught him.
So with scenarios like that, is he just doing it for fun? Is that quite common to get people that are just sort of trying to wind you up a little bit?
Well, this guy had already stolen $10 million worth of equipment from this particular vendor.
Okay. So he got what he wanted.
He got what he wanted. However, once he learned that our incident response team was there, he tried to have some fun with us, but we had the last laugh.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so you actually nailed him?
Oh, yeah. He was part of an organized crime group, and once he was kicked out of this company and law enforcement was trying to get a hold of him, he disappeared. And the story was that he didn't disappear on his own, that other parts of his organized crime group took him out of the picture because he was no longer an asset and he was a liability for them.
But from that fund perspective, is there still much of that goes on? Because in the early days, there wasn't a whole lot of money to be made out of, you know, getting into people's computers and so on. But it seems to have, the landscape seemed to have changed.
It certainly has. You can try to do the right thing. You know, you could stumble upon a vulnerability in a service that you're using. You know, maybe you're trying to book an airline ticket. And you suddenly find you can get first class for free or something, and you may report that to the airline, and suddenly you've got a law enforcement banging on your door claiming you're a hacker. So it's much different than it was in the 80s or the 90s for sure.
And what about the sort of bug bounties that are being, you know, put out there? We've even seen the US government sort of jumping in on this concept. Does that make a lot of sense to basically, you know, pay people to find issues with your security, sort of put it out to the general public? So it's not an individual firm coming in to audit you. It's just saying, look, anybody that can figure something out, can let us know confidentially, then we'll put some money on the table.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on bug bounty programs, but I do think if you structure them properly, they can be another tool in the toolbox. And honestly, the value of what some of these organizations get for the amount of money that they pay for the bugs is incredible. I mean, to think about paying someone full time to find bugs, that's a lot of money to get somebody good, but you may be able to have this outsourced bug bounty program that's for a fraction of the employment cost. So it tends to be a win-win for
pretty everybody. Good for the likes of Facebook and those very large organizations.
Sure. Right?
Yeah. So any sort of closing advice or experiences you'd like to share?
I would just advise companies to treat this as a business problem. This is happening. Organizations are being breached. You are valuable. If you're not valuable, then you probably shouldn't be in business. And my guess is that everyone is in business for a reason, because you're providing something of value. If you're interacting with consumers, or you're simply you're enterprise facing, you're doing something that is of interest to someone else. So at the very least, I would recommend that you find out if you've had a breach. Bring somebody in and say, look, have we had a problem here? And if we have, did they leave or are they still here? Because if they're still here, we need to get rid of them. And you can use that experience as a way to improve your security, maybe create a security program for the first time, or at the very least improve your security program and change the mindset. Because the best way to launch a security program that I found, unfortunately, is to go through a breach. Everyone is very focused. Everyone is motivated. And you get a lot of change that way.
You do. It can be very hard to get. It can be very hard to sort of convince people within an organization to make those investments. But as soon as they've been hit, the whole picture changes, doesn't
right.
it? Now, just drilling in. You know, again, we've got a lot of those smaller organizations in New Zealand. There might be 5 people, 10 people, 50 mm-hmm. people. Is it affordable at that sort of level to get somebody to come in and see whether you've been breached?
It's a good question. I'm not quite sure how to think about that for an organization that's that small.
Because it's not something I've come across with the sort of small business end of things so much. But you certainly hear when someone knows they've been breached at that size and they'll change their habits. But it's usually a reasonably expensive exercise to go through, isn't it?
Yeah. At that size, you're probably not running your own IT. I mean, you probably have laptops, but you're probably using someone else's mail. You're using storage in the cloud. So what I would do if you're a business of that size is I would learn what type of security practices those vendors provide you and what can they do to help you in the event that something suspicious is happening. Honestly, for an organization that size, I would make sure that I have good backups and that I use two-factor authentication. And I keep my systems up to date. If you do those 3 things, those are the best things I think you could do to protect yourself.
Yeah, and I guess going through an audit or review process, even for those smaller businesses, and just making sure you've got all those core practices sort of covered, and some of the other sort of smaller ones that fit alongside them is probably fairly affordable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you have to go through an exercise that says, what's the most likely bad thing that's going to happen to me? At that size, maybe it's losing a key laptop. What do you do if you lose that data? Or what if the data were encrypted by ransomware? Or those sorts of issues. And I would role play those out and say, well, if we lost this laptop, what would we do? Is the data available somewhere? I do the same thing with my own systems at home. Make sure, okay, if I lost the system, could I recover? If I can't recover, or here's another one. think about what you have in the cloud or elsewhere, and think about, could you deal with that being exposed? So if somebody stole it and put it on the internet for everyone to read, can you live with that? And if you can't, maybe you should think about what you have in the cloud or what you have on your laptop and scrub some of that stuff. That's a good exercise to go through as well. Email, the other thing is email is very, very valuable to intruders. When we deal with many cases, email is the first thing that's stolen. So think about what's in your email. Is your tax return in your email? Is your, you know, the equivalent of a social security number, some details that are very important to you, is it in there? And if they are, I would delete them. Get rid of those emails. There's no need to keep that stuff around.
How do they tend to use that information?
It's for identity theft. They'll take your identity. They'll buy cars in your name or buy a house in your name, or sometimes they file medical claims in your name.
I wouldn't mind somebody else buying a house in my name, as long as the mortgage wasn't to me. I guess that's the problem, right?
That's the problem, right? You find out months down the line that you haven't made your payments, and or, you know, whatever the case may be. So that's the problem. It's the recovery. That's another issue I find, and this is something the government needs to work on, all governments should work on, is to make it easier for victims to recover. At least in the United States, it's very difficult to recover from some of these identity theft cases, unlike, say, a credit card case.
Very hard to prove that it wasn't actually you.
Well, it's possible to prove that it wasn't you, but it takes so much effort on the part of the victim, and it can take a lot of time. And that's not acceptable, I think.
Mm. That's great. Well, thank you very much for your time, Richard. Yeah. It's been a great discussion.
Yeah, thank you. Great questions.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you again in New Zealand at some stage, will we?
I hope so, and hopefully my family too.
Excellent. That's great. All right. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
The New Zealand Business Podcast, brought to you by Guerrilla Technology, your strategic and proactive IT partner.